This is one that I haven't done that often, so we have a little bit more. Thus have I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Sawati in Jetta's Grove, Anathan Pandika's Park. There the Venerable Sariputta addressed the monks thus, "Friends," "Friend," they replied, "the Venerable Sariputta said this, 'Friends, just as the footprint of any living being that walks can be placed within the elephant's footprint, so is the elephant's footprint to be declared the chief of them because of his great size. So too all wholesome states can be included in the Four Noble Truths." What four? "In the noble truth of suffering, in the noble truth of the origin of suffering, in the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, in the noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering." So we're actually talking about the links of dependent origination on this sutta. And what is the noble truth of suffering? Birth is suffering, aging is suffering, death is suffering, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are suffering. Not to obtain what one wants is suffering. And I always add in, getting what one doesn't want is suffering. The five aggregates affected by craving and clinging are suffering. And what are the five aggregates affected by craving and clinging? They are the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging, the feeling aggregate affected by craving and clinging, the perception aggregate affected by craving and clinging, the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging, the consciousness aggregate affected by craving and clinging. What is the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging? It is the four great elements and the material form derived from those four great elements. And what are the four great elements? They are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. What, friends, is the earth element? The earth element may be either internal or external. What is the internal earth element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to. That is, head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinew, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, feces, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to. This is called the internal earth element. Now, both the internal earth element and the external earth element are simply earth element. And that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom. Thus, this is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted. Disenchanted here means you're not liking it. You're having more balance in your mind. You don't become enchanted with it. You don't like or dislike it. It's just like, okay, it's there. doesn't matter. One becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes his mind dispassionate towards the earth element. Dispassion means losing all fascination with. It means, yeah, there it is. It's just one more thing coming up. That's all. Now there comes a time when the water element is, when the water element is disturbed and when the external earth element vanishes. When even this external earth element, great as it is seen to be impermanent, subject to destruction, disappearance, and change, what of this body which is craved and clung to by the craving and lasts but for a while? There can be no considering that as I, me, or mine. So then, if others abuse, revile, scold, and harass a monk who has seen this element as it actually is, he understands thus: this painful feeling born of ear contact has risen in me. That is dependent, not independent. Dependent on what? Dependent on contact. When he sees that contact is impermanent, that feeling is impermanent, that perception is impermanent, that formations are impermanent, that consciousness is impermanent, and his mind having made an element its object, its objective support, enters into that new objective support and acquires confidence, steadiness, and resolution. Now, if others attack that monk in ways that are unwished for, undesired, and disagreeable, by contact with fists, clods, sticks, or knives, he understands thus: this body is of such a nature that contact with fists, clods, sticks, and knives assail it. But this has been said by the Blessed One in the advice on the simile of the saw. Monks, even if bandits were to sever you savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handed saw, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. So tireless energy shall be aroused in me and unremitting mindfulness established. My body shall be tranquil and untroubled, my mind collected and unified. And now let contact with fists, clods, sticks, and knives assail this body. For this teaching of the Buddha is being practiced by me. When that monk thus recollects the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, if equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in him, then he rouses a sense of urgency. It is a loss for me. It is no gain for me. It is bad for me. It's no good for me. That when I thus recollect the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in me. It's a real interesting thing about learning and using the recollection on the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, because if there is any fear, it will just dissipate. And your mind becomes very peaceful and calm. I had a student in Malaysia that she wanted to learn meditation in the worst way. But every time she closed her eyes, she would have visions that would frighten her. And she told me that she couldn't do it. There was just no way. I'm just too afraid. So I had her learn with the beads the recollection of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And after she did that, she could sit with her mind at ease, and she could close her eyes and not be afraid. It only lasted for a little while before the fear came up. That's okay. As she started practicing more and more, and she did that every time before she sat, the time that extended for her to not have fear became longer and longer. And after about a month, she didn't have any fear arising at all. So a lot of the protections have a very practical use. And that's why I came up that I want to get a separate book that has just protections in it. And that can be for the monks after they learn the other chanting, then they can learn those. Just as when a daughter-in-law sees her father-in-law, she arouses a sense of urgency to please him, so too, when a monk thus recollects the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, if equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in him, then he rouses a sense of energy. But if, when he recollects the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, equanimity supported by the wholesome becomes established in him, then he is satisfied with it. At that point, friends, much has been done by that monk. What, friends, is the water element? The water element may be either internal or external. What is the internal water element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is water, watery and clung to, that is, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and or urine, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is water, watery and clung to. This is called the internal water element. The external water element, you can't really feel. Put your hand in a bucket of water or a bowl of water and tell me what you feel. You feel hot or cold, but you don't feel the water. Interesting thing. Now, both the internal water element and the external water element are simply water element, and that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom. Thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the water element. It's easy to get disenchanted with the water element when you think of the phlegm and the bile and the pus and snot and all of those kind of things. So he becomes disenchanted with the water element and makes mind dispassionate toward the water element. This is something that it keeps coming back to, using the same words about disenchantment and dispassion. And that's why at the start of the sitting, you let go of any desire for anything to happen in the way you want it to. If you don't, you wind up putting in too much energy and you have a lot of restlessness. What you need to do is tell yourself, my job as a meditator is simply to observe, not to do anything. Just see what's happening. And if there's disturbance, 6R. That's all. Now, one of the problems with straight Vipassana practice is they teach you to watch something until it goes away. Observe it. Watch it until it leaves. And gently in your mind, note it, whatever it happens to be. When you get to the deeper stages of meditation, it's real easy to get caught in that. Well, I just watched it for a little while and then went back to my object of meditation. Whoops. That leads you to one-pointed concentration. You have to have the relaxed step. But whatever you're watching, you're feeding that. So it will come back over and over and over again. And that's not right effort. Right effort is seeing an unwholesome thing arise, letting it be there by itself, and then relaxing. Then re-smiling, returning to your object of meditation, and then repeat staying with your object of meditation for as long as you can. So watching something until it goes away is not what the Buddha was teaching us. He was teaching us to let it be. Yes, it's there, but don't keep your attention on it. Now, the thing with the Dhamma, one of the things it says is that this is immediately effective. When you watch something until it changes or goes away, you're not being immediately effective. What you have to do is see it, let it be there by itself, and then relax. That's immediately effective. Right? And then it's also immediately effective when you smile, and it's immediately effective when you come back to your object of meditation and stay with your object of meditation. That's immediately effective. But just watching something until it goes away because it's interesting, that means that you're not disenchanted with it. That means you're interested in it. And you've heard me talk about, I had this student that 5 years, every time he came, I was sure he was going to become awakened. But his curiosity and his previous training in meditation always said to watch it until it goes away. Go see what it is. No. It doesn't matter what it is. Is it yours? Or are you taking that with a fascination? I want to see where it leads to. He had a lot of problems with memories of past lives, and he had a fascination with it. It kept telling him, I don't care if it comes up. Well, I have to see what it is. No, you don't. Let it be there. Relax. Until finally he came last year, and I could tell in his voice that he was tired of doing that. And he became, very quickly, he became disenchanted and dispassionate with whatever it was. He'd come to an interview and he would say, you know, it's just more stuff. And I really don't care about that stuff. Oh, finally. And because of that, his mind awakened. And it's because of that attitude that he was having, even going back into the regular meditation, even after he experienced Nibbana. His mind was disenchanted. There's nothing that's interesting about any of this stuff. And he had perfect equanimity. And all of the other awakening factors, they came into balance. So he had the fruition experience. And then he started to see, oh yeah, there's some real changes in my mind, and my interest in stuff is becoming so much less because there's nothing interesting in it. It was only me. It was only what I thought I wanted to do, instead of just saying it's just more grist for the mill. Just let it be. So I told him to get into the habit every time he sits to tell himself, I don't care what happens next. It's not that interesting. You have to let go of the longing to attain something before you can attain it. Because longing has that subtle I am that in it. Oh, but I want to see what this is. I have since had some real interesting conversations with him about what impersonal nature really is. And there's nothing in this world that's yours personally. It's just arising and passing away of phenomena. You don't have any control over it. It's going to come up when it's going to come up. If you grab it and take it as yours and get your curiosity up about it, you can look forward to that keep happening. So when you let go and just, there it is, okay. Don't keep your attention on it. Now, one of the things that can happen when you're in the deeper states like neither perception or non-perception is meditation pain can arise. And that's almost always when people say, well, I'm going to get up and do some walking. Whose pain was it? Who didn't like that painful feeling? Who wanted it to go away? Who wanted to run away from that painful feeling? Who was causing themselves suffering by taking it personally? Me, mine. So, pain is one of the better objects of meditation. Because when you six are it, a new pain comes up, and your mind goes back to it. How did that happen? What happened first? What happened after that? What happened after that? In other words, when you start looking at how the process works, it doesn't matter whether it's a painful feeling or not. It's the same process. And you start to see how your mind starts grabbing on a little bit with the craving. And then you have these little thoughts. Well, I think I'm going to break my sitting and go do some walking. So even, and it's, you say you feel the pain in your body. But once you get into the arupa jhanas, you got no body. Pain comes up. Where is that pain? Actually, in mind. It's a mental pain. What you do with that in the present moment dictates what happens in the future. You fight with the pain, you run away from the pain, you try to control the pain. You can look forward to it coming up over and over again till you learn. Don't do that. Okay, we're at the water element. Okay. Now there comes a time when the external water element is disturbed. It carries away villages, towns, cities, districts, and countries. There comes a time when the waters of the great ocean sink down 100 leagues, 200 leagues, 300 leagues, 400, 500 leagues, 600, 700 leagues. There comes a time when the waters of the great ocean stand 7 palms deep, 6 palms, 2 palms, 1 palm. There comes a time when the waters of the great ocean stand 7 fathoms deep, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There comes a time when the waters of the great ocean stand half a fathom deep. Only waist deep, only knee deep, only ankle deep. There comes a time when the waters of the great ocean are not enough to wet even the first joint of your finger. When even this external water element, great as it is seen to be impermanent, subject to destruction, disappearance and change, what of this body which is clung to by craving and last but for a while? There can be no considering that as I or mine or I am. So then, if others abuse, revile, scold, and harass a monk who has seen this element as it actually is, he understands thus. This painful feeling born of ear contact has risen in me that is dependent, not independent. Dependent on what? Dependent on contact. When he sees that contact is impermanent, that feeling is impermanent, that perception is impermanent, that formations are impermanent, that consciousness is impermanent, and his mind having made an element, its objective support enters into that new objective support. What is that objective support? This is not me. This is not mine. This I am not. And acquires confidence, steadiness, and resolution. Now, if others attack that monk in ways that are unwished for, undesired, disagreeable, by contact with fists, clods, sticks, or knives, he understands thus, this body is of such a nature that contact with fists, clods, sticks, and knives assail it. But it has been said by the Blessed One in his advice on the simile of the saw, monks, even if bandits were to sever you savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handed saw, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. So tireless energy shall be aroused in me and unremitting mindfulness established. My body shall be tranquil and untroubled, my mind collected and unified. Now let contact with fists, clods, sticks, and knives assail this body, for the teaching of the Buddha is being practiced by me. At that point, too, friends, much has been done by that monk. It's not easy to do that. Now we have the fire element. What, friends, is the fire element? The fire element may be either internal or external. What is the internal fire element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery and clung to, that is, that by which one is warmed, ages, and is consumed, and that by which what is eaten, drunk, consumed, and tasted gets completely digested, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery and clung to. This is called the internal fire element. Now, both the internal fire element and the external fire element are simply fire element. And that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the fire element and makes mind dispassionate toward the fire element. Now there comes a time when the external fire element is disturbed. It burns up villages, towns, cities, districts, and countries. It goes out due to lack of fire, a lack of fuel, only when it comes to green grass or to a road or to a rock or to water or to a fair open space. There comes a time when they seek to make a fire element even with the cock's feather or a hide paring. When even this external fire element, great as it is seen to be impermanent, subject to destruction, disappearance, and change, what of this body that which is clung to by craving and lasts but for a while? There can be no considering that as I, me, or I am. So, if others revile and scold and harass a monk who has seen this element actually as it is, he understands. No. This painful feeling born of your contact has risen in me. That is dependent, not independent. Dependent on what? Dependent on contact. When one sees that contact is impermanent, that feeling is impermanent, that perception is impermanent, that formations are impermanent, that consciousness is impermanent, and his mind having made an element, its objective support enters into that new objective support and acquires confidence, steadiness, and resolution. Now, if others attack that monk in ways that are unwished for, undesired, and disagreeable, by contact with fists, clods, sticks, or knives, he understands thus, this body is of such a nature that contact with fists, clods, sticks, or knives assail it. But it has been said by the Blessed One in his advice on the simile of the saw, monks, if bandits were to sever you savagely limb by limb, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out his teaching. So tireless energy shall be aroused in me and unremitting mindfulness established. My body shall be tranquil and untroubled, my mind collected and unified. And now let contact with fists, clods, sticks, and knives assail this body, for this teaching of the Buddhas is being practiced by me. When that monk thus recollects the Buddha Dhamma and Sangha, if equanimity supported by wholesome does not become established in him, then he arouses a sense of urgency thus. It is a loss for me. It is no gain for me. It is bad for me. It's no good for me. That when I thus recollect on the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in me. Just as when a daughter-in-law sees her father-in-law rouses a sense of urgency to please him, so too, when that monk thus recollects the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, if equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in him, he arouses his sense of urgency. But if, when he recollects the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, equanimity supported by the wholesome becomes established in him, then he is satisfied with it. At that point, friends, much has been done by that monk. The air element. What, friends, is the air element? The air element might be either internal or external. What is the internal air element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is air, airy and clung to. That is upgoing winds, downgoing winds. Winds in the belly, winds in the bowels, winds that course through the limb, in and out breath, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is air, airy and clung to. This is called the internal air element. Now, both the internal air element and the external air element are simply air element. And that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the air element and makes mind dispassionate towards the air element. The one word that I object to in the sutta is makes mind dispassionate. Who's making it? Now you're talking about the impersonal nature of everything, but if it makes mind do something, that's not impersonal anymore, that's personal. So I would change that word to mean to be observes mind to become dispassionate toward the air element. Now there comes a time when the external air element is disturbed. It sweeps away villages, towns, cities, districts, and countries. There comes a time in the last month of the hot season when they seek wind by means of a fan or a bellows or even the strands of straw in a dip fringe on the thatch, not let me try that and even the straw of the strands of straw in the dip fringe of the thatch do not stir. When even this external air element, great as it is seen to be impermanent, subject to destruction, disappearance, and change, what of this body, which is clung to by craving and lasts but for a while? There can be no considering this as I, or mine, or I am. So, when others revile, scold, and harass a monk who has seen the air element as it actually is, he understands thus. This painful feeling born of your contact has arisen in me. That is dependent, not independent. Dependent on what? Dependent on contact. Then he sees that contact is impermanent, feeling is impermanent, perception is impermanent, formations are impermanent, that consciousness is impermanent, and his mind, having made an element, its objective support enters into that new objective support and acquires confidence, steadiness, and resolution. Now, if others attack that monk in ways that are unwished for, undesired, and disagreeable, by contact with fists, clods, sticks, or knives, he understands thus, this body is of such a nature that contact with fists, clods, sticks, or knives assail it. But this has been said by the Blessed One in his advice on the simile of the saw. Monks, even if bandits were to sever you savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handed saw, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. So tireless energy shall be aroused in him, and unremitting mindfulness established. My body shall be tranquil and untroubled, my mind collected and unified. Now let contact with the fists, clods, sticks, and knives assail this body, for this teaching of the Buddhas is being practiced by me. When the monk thus recollects the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, if equanimity is supported by wholesome, does not become established in him, then he rouses a sense of urgency thus. It is a loss for me, it is no gain for me, it is bad for me, it is no good for me, that when I thus recollect the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in me. Just as when a daughter or daughter-in-law sees her father-in-law, she arouses a sense of urgency to please him. So too, when that monk thus recollects the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, if equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in him, then he arouses a sense of urgency. But if when he reflects on the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, equanimity supported by the wholesome becomes established in him, then he is satisfied with it. At that point, friends, much has been done by that monk. Friends, just as when space is enclosed by timber, creepers, grass, and clay, it comes to be termed just house. So too, when a space is enclosed by bone, sinew, flesh, and skin, it becomes termed as just material form. If, friends, internally the eye is intact, but no external form comes into its range, there is no corresponding consciousness engagement, then there is no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. If internally the eye is intact, external forms come into range, but there is no corresponding consciousness engagement, then there's no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. There has to be light. That's how you can have something out there, but the consciousness doesn't arise. But when internally the eye is intact and external forms come into range and there is the corresponding consciousness engagement, then there is the manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. The material form in what has thus come to be is included in the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The feeling in what has come to be is included in the feeling aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The perception in what has thus come to be is included in the perception of aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The formations in what has come to be are to be included in the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The consciousness is what has come to be is included in the consciousness aggregate affected by craving and clinging. He understands thus, this indeed is how there comes to be the inclusion, gathering, and amassing of things into these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging. Now this has been said by the Blessed One. One who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. And these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging are dependently arisen. The desire, indulgence, inclination, and holding based on these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the origin of suffering. The removal of desire and lust, the abandonment of desire and lust for these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the cessation of suffering. At that point, too, friends, much has been done by that monk. If, friends, internally the ear is intact, but no external sounds come into range. This is going to go through the whole thing, and I think I'm going to. 27. And there's no corresponding conscious engagement, that there's no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. If internally the ear is intact and sounds come into range, but there's no corresponding consciousness engagement, then there's no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. But when internally the ear is intact, sound, external sounds come into range, then there is the corresponding conscious engagement. Then there is the manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. The material form in what has thus come to be included in the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The feeling in what has come to be is included in the feeling aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The perception in what has come to be is included in the perception aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The formations in what has come to be is included in the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The consciousness in what has come to be is included in the consciousness aggregate affected by craving and clinging. He understands thus, this indeed is how there comes to be the inclusion, gathering, and amassing of things into these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging. Now it has been said by the Blessed One, one who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. And these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging are dependently arisen. The desire, indulgence, inclination, and holding based on these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the origin of suffering. The removal of desire, lust, and the abandonment of desire and lust for these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is a cessation of suffering. At that point, too, friends, much has been done by that monk. If, friends, internally the nose is intact, but no external smells come into range, and there is no corresponding conscious engagement, then there's no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. If internally the nose is intact and external smells come into range, but there's no corresponding conscious engagement, then there's no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. But when internally the nose is intact and external smells come into range, there is the corresponding conscious engagement. Then there is the manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. The material form in what has thus come to be is included in the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The feeling in what has thus come to be is included in the feeling aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The perception in what has come to be is included in the perception aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The formations in what has come to be are included in the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The consciousness in what has thus come to be is included in the consciousness aggregate affected by craving and clinging. He understands thus, this indeed is how there comes to be the inclusion, gathering, and amassing of things into these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging. Now, this has been said by the Blessed One. One who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. And these five aggregates affected by clinging are dependently arisen. The desire, indulgence, inclination, and holding based on these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the origin of suffering. the removal of desire and lust, the abandonment of desire and lust for these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the cessation of suffering. At that point, too, friends, much has been done by that monk. If, friends, internally the tongue is intact, but no external flavors come into range, then there is no, come into range, and there is no corresponding conscious engagement, then there is no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. If internally the tongue is intact and external tastes come into range, there is no corresponding conscious engagement, then there is no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. But when internally the eye is intact, the tongue is intact, external tastes come into range, there is the corresponding conscious engagement, then there is the manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. The material form in what has come to be is included in the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The feeling in what has thus come to be is included in the feeling of affected by craving and clinging. The perception in what has come to be is included in the perception aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The formation in what has come to be is included in the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The consciousness in which has thus come to be is included in the consciousness aggregate affected by craving and clinging. He understands thus, this indeed is how there comes to be the inclusion, gathering, and amassing of things into these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging. Now this has been said by the Blessed One. One who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. And these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging are dependently arisen. The desire, indulgence, inclination, and holding based on these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the origin of suffering. The removal of desire and lust, the abandonment of desire and lust for these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the cessation of suffering. At that point, too, friends, much has been done by that monk. If, friends, internally the body is intact, but there's no external tangibles come into range, and there's no corresponding conscious engagement, then there is no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. If internally the eye is intact, and if internally the body is intact and external tangibles come into range, but there's no corresponding conscious engagement, then there's no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. But when internally the body is intact, external tangibles come into range, and there is the corresponding consciousness engagement, then there is the manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. The material form in what has come to be is included in the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The feeling in what has thus come to be is included in the feeling aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The perception in what has come to be is included in the perception aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The formations in what has come to be are included in the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The consciousness in what has thus come to be is included in the consciousness affected by craving and clinging. He understands thus, this indeed is how there comes to be inclusion and gathering and amassing of things into these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging. Now this has been said by the Blessed One. One who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. And these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging are dependently arisen. The desire, indulgence, inclination, and holding based on the five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the origin of suffering. The removal of desire and lust, the abandonment of desire and lust for these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the cessation of suffering. At that point, two monks, much has been done by that monk. Friends, internally mind is intact, but no external mind objects come into range. There is no corresponding conscious engagement. Then there is no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. If internally mind is intact, external mind objects come into range, but there's no corresponding conscious engagement, then there is no manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. But then internally mind is intact, external mind objects come into range, there is the corresponding conscious engagement. Then there is the manifestation of the corresponding section of consciousness. The material form in what has thus come to be is included in the material form aggregate, affected by craving and clinging. The feeling in what has come to be is included in the feeling aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The perception in what has come to be is included in the perception aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The formation in what has thus come to be is included in the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging. The consciousness and what has come to be is included in the consciousness aggregate affected by craving and clinging. He understands thus, this indeed is how there comes to be the inclusion, gathering, and amassing of things into these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging. Now this has been said by the Blessed One. One who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. And these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging are dependently arisen. The desire, indulgence, inclination, and holding based on these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the origin of suffering. The removal of desire and lust, the abandonment of desire and lust for these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging is the cessation of suffering. At that point, too, friends, much has been done by that monk. That is what the Venerable Sariputta said. the monks were satisfied and delighted in the venerable Sariputta's words. Drives home a point about five aggregates, doesn't it? And this is what it means to give ear. Not listen, not hear it and say, oh, he's going to say it again. But let it sink in. Let go of all of your desire to think about instead of listen. This is the original way that the Buddha gave his Dhamma talks. And this is a short talk. He would give talks that lasted all night. And the monks were just as attentive at the start of the talk as they are at the end of the talk. So he might have repeated this whole thing three or four times. Probably three, knowing him. He liked to do everything in threes. But imagine how, when you're really attentive, you're not doing anything else, you're not thinking about anything else, how it sinks in. And how you start looking, yeah, these are the five aggregates. They're all always affected by craving and clinging if I don't use the six R's when they arise. When you use the six R's when they arise, they're not affected by craving and clinging. Craving, I like it, I don't like it. Clinging, story about. So when you use the six R's and relax into it, mind becomes clear, mind becomes bright. How can suffering arise if there is no craving? That's the importance of the six R's. And it will take you all the way to arahatship. The six R's are by far the most important part of doing the practice. That extra step that the Buddha put in to break up deep one-pointed concentration so you became aware of this tightness when it first arises. And this is subtle. It's not any big, massive thing. You just see mind start to do this, and you recognize it, and you relax right then. So you keep coming back to your object of meditation. And when you get into neither perception nor non-perception, your object of meditation is mind itself. And stillness. So that way you can see when these links start to come up. And each one of these links of dependent origination has a subtle tightness. Still has some craving. Now you've let go of craving a lot in the gross way. When you get to this other state of meditation, it's subtle. And the whole reason that it arises is because of that personality belief. I'm that. That's what craving is. I like it. I don't like it. I want it to last longer. I don't want that anymore. So it also drives home about the importance of being able to see the conditioned events that happen so that all of these links can arise. So you see how they arise, but you start focusing on how to let them go. The faster you 6R, the less links of dependent origination you will see. And this is the way the Buddha said is the correct way to practice. Not focus on suffering. Learn how to have that suffering cease. And that's what 6Rs are all about. Ceasing. Letting be. Not having any more disturbance arise. How do you think you get into the cessation of perception, feeling, and consciousness? By letting craving be there? By having disturbance? No, it's no disturbance. And that's why feeling, perception, and consciousness, they just stop. That's it. For a period of time. When you get to be an anagami, you will be able to work with your determinations and sit in that state for as long as 7 days. Good vacation. No disturbance. Wow. Think about that. That's really amazing. Is that possible in this lifetime? Absolutely. I haven't met an arahat that I know of in this lifetime, but I'm looking forward to meeting one.